Dot, 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 dot.
Oh, man. Come on now. That is one heck of an intro to a podcast, wouldn't you say? Woo! I sure would. How y'all doing? This is another episode of Wiest World, the podcast. And this is part two of our discussion with the great Steve Touré. Part one, we got into his background, his influences, and a discussion of really of his professional life. Now, let's get into the music. And man, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of music. We would need 10 more hours at least. His resume is vast. He's simply one of the most important trombonists that we have in our music. So without further ado, let's jump on over, get into the lightning round and the music of Steve Touré. Here he is. To dive in, since I've got it impossible, you know, it's impossible to choose tracks to talk about. But what I'd like to do, I've got a couple here, and I thought I'd just mention them, tell you what I think when I hear them, and then just ask you your impressions, concepts on it. And it's called The Lightning Round.
Lightning.
There's the sound right there. It's the sound. I'm going to edit, put it in, because it goes by fast. So okay. I just chose a couple, man. So
Go for it.
All right. So we'll talk Generations, because I love that project. And it turns out that's not your newest one. We learned that the other one is. But on Generations, I got to go with Planting the Seed, because is that seed as in Cedar Walton? It sounded like
absolutely.
That. Yeah, I thought so. Bam. Got that one right. So, yeah, let's go ahead and play this track, man. The music of Steve Touré from the album Generations. Here is the piece, an original composition by Steve, Planting the Seed. We'll be right back. Tell me about planting the seed, the concept, how it was playing with your son on drums, Orion. He sounds great, man.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I wrote that as a reflection of playing with Cedar and also with Art Blakey. And a lot of Cedar's music is also informed from the experience of him playing with Art Blakey several generations earlier than I did.
Mm.
You know, but it's that kind of approach. And
I thought you nailed it, man. The changes sounded like Cedar. The left hand piano with the bass was all Cedar, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful tune.
Play and young Wallace Roney really did a great job on the trumpet. He doesn't sound like his dad. He got his own voice, you know.
He does. I noticed that right away. I wasn't as familiar with his playing, and boy, he sounds wonderful. And you guys...
his intonation and blend and articulation's clear, and I really like playing with him.
Your writing made great use of the whole ensemble, I thought too, man. But you know, I'm a sucker for anything Cedar influenced, and so planting the seed. So it's lightning. So there's more lightning sounds. We're moving. I had to choose the Lotus Flower next, that project, because I just thought one of the things that I admire about your, how to say this, the ouvre, I never know how to pronounce that word, your body of work is always exploring new things and new textures. And I think that's a sign of a great artist myself. But so Lotus Flower, I want to know about the concept of that album, but I had to zero in on the chairman of the board because maybe the most unusual one on the album as far as the concept of the Lotus Flower, but I just love the tune. So is that all about JJ? What's up with Chairman? Well, all right. So I got this one wrong. I thought it sounded like JJ influence, but we're going to find out the real story in a minute. But first, let's listen to the tune. Here is Steve Turay's composition, Chairman of the Board, from the album The Lotus Flower. Thank you.
It ain't really about JJ, and it's not about Frank Sinatra, although he knows known as chairman of the board. And I like Frank Sinatra, by the way, and I like Johnny Hartman and Joe Williamson.
Man, you know, great vocalist.
Yeah.
It sounded Jay-like to me for some reason. But
a little bit maybe influenced without trying, you know.
That's even cooler.
Because JJ had a profound influence on me. Just, you know, listening to his records turned me around when I was coming up. And
you told me
every record I could of his.
Yeah, you told me a story once. I was trying to remember where Jay came out to hear you at a club, and you didn't know he was there or something till the end of the night, or what was that story?
Right, that was at Bradley's. And at the end of the, and he was sitting way back at the end of the bar by the door, and I couldn't see the from the bandstand too well. It was kind of dark back there. Yeah. And afterwards, he came up and we were talking. And I said, "Man, I didn't know you was here. If I had known you were here, I would have played one of your tunes because I play your songs sometimes, you know." And he said, "Well, that's cool, but I didn't want you to know I was here. I wanted to hear what you do."
Ah, that's the line I remember from it. Isn't that beautiful, man?
And you know what he told me? Told me that he liked me because I didn't sound like him.
Wow.
And he's my major, he's my major influence, but I'm not emulating him at any,
right.
Not trying to, you know what I'm trying to get to that he gave me? is not his lick, so to speak, his choice of notes and rhythms, but the clarity that he plays with, the sound that he plays with, the rhythmic presence that he plays with. He leads. He's part of the rhythm section. He's not just playing on top of the rhythm or following or playing against it. He's part of the rhythm section and leading it the same way Charlie Parker did. Yep. I mean, you know.
Wow. Well, yeah, I was going to say, if there was any influence that's apparent, it would be the sound, you know, and time feel that you have.
Sounds, yeah, that time like feel.
Jay, definitely. Time. Oh, my gosh. Well, on this tune, Chairman of the Board, I was just listening. It's got that cool vamp in there. Sounds like some kind of flat nine vamp that's cool, but the form was great. And your solo, this was one that I was thinking very angular and swinging, though. It was like all over the horn, down low and up. Really good showcase for that aspect.
Well, you know, I don't remember what I played, but I remember the melody, you know, boom, bum, boom, doo, bee, da, dee, da, doo, boom, boom, bap.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember, but I don't remember what I played, you know, all these years.
Well, same way on that. And, you know, Regina Carter sounded great on that, man.
Yeah, man.
Killing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the concept for that whole record, what's the typical sextet in jazz? Well, usually it's trumpet and saxophone, and then very often another saxophone, but we're going to say trumpet, saxophone, and trombone.
That's how it should be right there. Yeah.
And so instead of that, I had violin, cello, and trombone.
Nice.
And that was the concept, but the strings can swing and do the same things that the horns can do, which they did.
Yeah.
But most string players did, even jazz string players, they don't really get that blues feeling. I mean, some of them do, but it's not common. They usually gravitate toward the avant-garde, where you don't have to play changes or play the blues per se with the rhythmic feel. It's more like free-flowing kind of whatever.
Or kind of straight. That's what I thought Regina did well. She was swinging. It sounded very natural.
You know what's hard for string players is they're trained orchestrally, and I mean, that's where the violin comes from. And their bowings don't lend themselves to the rhythmic accents that come with jazz and swing.
Right.
And African rhythm. So they have to figure out different bowings to get that rhythmic flow.
Yeah, this is all the articulations. That's the big difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that was kind of jarring. A jarring transition. Well, it's break time. And that means it's time for a word from our sponsor. That would be me. So a while back, I got real tired of social media. I was saying, man, this is just not made for musicians and creative folk. So I made my own social media. It's called Jamtrek. Jamtrek. And the address could not be easier. It's jamtrek.com. So if you're looking for a group of creative folks, artists, musicians of all types, actors, authors, poets, don't you know it? Head on over to Jamtrek today. It's free. Sign up. No algorithms. We're not going to sell nothing. But you could sell stuff. You could advertise what you're doing. You can get new relationships with people that are creative, out there doing it. Show them what you're up to. Learn what they're up to. It's Jamtrek. It's a hang. It's a community. I hope to see you there. jamtrek.com. Well, you know what? I'm gonna break my rule here and grab another one off this project, because there were so many cool things. Tell us about the Inflated Tear, which I just think is a beautiful piece.
That's Rassant's composition.
And then your arrangement is just beautiful. I like the format and what you did with it. And it's got a story though, doesn't it? Programmatically, what is the story there?
Well, Rahsaan wrote that song. He was blind. And Rahsaan wrote that song about the experience because when he was about two or three, he got some kind of eye and conjunctivitis or something. I don't know. He went to the hospital and they put the wrong medicine in his
Oh,
blindness.
man.
And back then, there wasn't 1-800 lawyers. He couldn't, do anything about it.
Right.
And it was just, oh, sorry,
Yeah.
if you can imagine that. So he could remember seeing colors
Yeah.
and
Wow.
whatnot, but he couldn't see. It was, if you see his eyes without the shades on, it was like the whites of his eyes covered his whole eye. It just scarred his eyes up,
Oh,
So for
man.
him, he could tell if the it's like looking through a piece of opaque white glass. He could tell if the lights were on or the lights was off, but that was it.
Wow.
But in the late 60s, when I played with him, he used to play that composition.
Oh, okay.
And he played it on three horns at once.
Yeah, that's an
And
amazing thing he did.
I want to tell all the listeners to go on YouTube and check out Rahsaan Roland Kirk, The Inflated Tear. And it's not the recording. There's a live video from Europe in black and white film that really show you what he was about. It's pretty amazing what he did with playing three saxophones at once. It
Yeah.
wasn't a joke. It was beautiful, man.
Right. Yeah, there was nothing campy or
No, man, it's
some
real,
kind
man.
of, yeah, it musically made sense. I totally agree.
Totally, man,
Well, it's
And
such a great concept, and the arrangement on that is just, yeah, it's kind of like I wrote down here, hauntingly beautiful. I mean, I thought it was beautiful in a way that was
yeah.
deep, just haunting. Yeah, I got all haunted listening to this. It's very poignant, beautiful, and I'm going to include the whole track here because we need to experience it, I think. Here's Steve Turay's beautiful arrangement of the Rahsaan Roland Kirk composition, The Inflated Tear, from the album The Lotus Flower.
And Rahsaan also, without trying to turn me on to the sound of the shell.
That's right. He's the one that did that, right? Is that true?
And it was funny how it happened, because he made all kind of instruments. He could play anything, you know. Yeah. And he, one time he'd come to town, he'd have he's something he called a Black Mystery Pipe. So he'd be laughing. He'd say, "Yeah, that's the Black Mystery. This is the Black Mystery Pipes." And he put a length, maybe a 2 feet or something, a garden hose, black garden hose, with, and he'd tape a funnel on the end of it like a bell. And then he put the saxophone mouthpiece from a soprano, I guess, in the other end. Mm-hmm. And he cut holes in it like finger holes, and it sounded kind of like a snake charmer thing. And he'd play on that. And wow. He'd make these instruments. And another time he came, he had a seashell. Mm. It had the end cut off like a brass instrument. And so 3 nights went by, and he didn't play it. It was just sitting there. And so I said to him after the third night, I said, "You ever going to play that?" He said, "Yeah, I'll play it when the time is right."
Hmm.
And because he was into sounds and colors and stuff.
Right.
And so one night, the next night, these people come in and got drunk and just started talking loud, and they weren't listening to music, and everybody got dragged. Mm. So he was a champ of circular breathing. I will say this publicly and challenge it.
Right.
Kenny G is not the champion of circular breathing. Rahsaan Roland Kirk is.
Right.
And he picked up the shell and he held the note on that so long these people freaked out and quit talking.
Yeah.
And when they quit talking, everybody in the club applauded.
Wow. Just holding it that was, note forever, man. Circular.
Yeah, breathing. It was hilarious, man. But I loved the sound of it. It was so peaceful and so beautiful that he let me try it. And that's how I'm getting one of these. And then I discovered that putting my hand in it would change the pitch, and I went on to develop the shell as a solo instrument in jazz.
Well, you sure did, man, and that's one of the things I want to mention. Maybe we'll just do this one next. So let's go out of order here. The next project I was going to mention had to get into sanctified shells, and you take this concept and just turned it into a standardized instrument and taught some other cats in the shell choir. So off that recording, I just got to choose, because I dig it, is the tune Gumbo. I just that one just grooves so hard. I love it. You know, kind of like a blues, and it had some other stuff in there with a vamp. And
Well, it's always time for Gumbo. Here is Sanctified Shells Gumbo. Thank you.
Putting that group together, I got a couple of questions. How do you best record the shells? And then how do you write for them? You had to work out the keys they're in. You know, when I watch you do it, you have 10 of them or something, you know.
Well, it depends on the tune, but different shells are different pitches.
Right.
And the pitch of the shell has to be some note in the chord, you know. And I know all my shells. I make them myself. And the guys in the group give them back to me after rehearsal. I don't let nobody keep my shells. But for trombone, it's easy to catch, because with the trombone, if you put the slide out, it lowers the pitch. With the shell, if you put your hand into the shell, it lowers the pitch. So it's a very similar thing, and trombones catch on quickly.
And you have the end of it kind of shaped like a trombone mouthpiece.
I cut them off to be like, exactly. Yeah. And I smooth them out and put plastic on it so that it don't cut you. And you know, the parts are all simple. It's really about the rhythm and the concept.
Right.
And I always make sure I got good drummers and bass players, because that's the key to the groove. When the bass and the drums got the thing going on.
Well, yeah, especially something like that gumbo groove, which is so nice. And how long did it take the cats like Robin and Douglas, all those guys, Rinaldo, to pick up the shells? Were they pretty quick with that?
Yeah, man. By the end of the first rehearsal, they was already getting it, you know.
Wow. That's cool. Well, it's such an amazing sound, and I can't wait for the listeners to hear it and explore it further, because it's really a cool sound, and I love the ways that you approach it. And then you pop the trombone over the top of the whole thing, and it's great. The whole thing just it is a beautiful vehicle for writing and expression, man. It has that kind of, like that plaintive ancient kind of vibe to it. That's so wonderful. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we're doing the lightning, so it's going by fast. Here's our big closer. So the big closer, I went to your classic Rhythm Within that had so many great people on it. And I had to go for Since I Fell for You with Brit. Brit's on there. So you're such a chameleon to me. You could fit in with anybody and still be Steve, but... Is it you on plunger and him open, or is it, have I got
yes.
that? Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that was him open and you're on the plunger with Pixie, it sounded like.
Man, I don't play as smooth as Britt. Boy, he's smoother than silk. Woo! Melted butter, man. He's something else, man.
That was really fun for me to check out, to learn his playing a little more. And he's got some chops too, man.
Yeah, Britt has some super chops, man.
Well, that is so cool, man. And your plunger on there, man, is vocal. It sounds like you're speaking, you know, like Tricky Sam, kind of like words almost, you know. It's wonderful to hear. I really enjoyed
it. You know, yeah, I was playing a little smaller board back then too. I found a smaller board lends itself more. I'm playing a little larger horn now, and it still works, but it doesn't quite have the dramatic effect of when you manipulate the plunger. It changes the overtones, and you get more colors with a smaller bore horn because it's brighter, so you got more high overtones to work with.
Man, I can't wait for it. Let's play the track. Here is Steve Turay on plunger. The silky smooth Britt Woodman on open horn, and there's some shells in here too. So here's from the album Rhythm Within, Steve's take on Since I Fell for You.
Bye.
Just watching you play, your embouchure is a perfect setup for playing plunger. Mine is a little angled, so when I play plunger, it's a little uncomfortable. But man, your setup just lends itself perfect perpendicular slide, and the plunger just rests right up there. And you're expressing, man. It sounds great.
Yeah, well, I tell you this, when I first started doing it, it wasn't comfortable.
Oh, really?
Look, when you're playing an open horn, no mutes, no plunger, nothing. First of all, the horn tends to be front heavy anyway because of the slide.
Right.
And just like, you know, how violin players are supposed to completely support the instrument between their chin and their clavicle or whatever it is, their that bone on your top of your chest, and therefore your hand is free to manipulate the fingerboard and your other arm is free to manipulate the bow. With the trombone, the horn is held in with the left hand for most people.
Right.
Slide Hampton was the other way around.
Yeah, man.
But
Slide.
That enables you to hold the right arm that works the slide is free to relax and not have to hold up the horn. But with the plunger, if you have instead of holding it at the braces, you're holding it way out at the end of the bell.
Right. Yep.
And therefore, you have to put some weight of the horn that's held up through the slide, too. And And it's kind of awkward until you really figure it out and adjust your body. It's also got to rest a little on your shoulder if possible.
Right. Yeah. As opposed to some folks will try to compensate and it causes too much pressure on the chops. And
yeah. Yeah. It took a while to get comfortable with it. I mean, by a while, I mean, 5 years.
Sure.
I've not given up.
There is the trick right there, man, in the shed until you get it. Well, that's a great one. I mean, there's so many examples of you, playing the hell out.
You know
of
what my favorite plunger recording?
What's that?
I did a record for Telarc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's called In the Spur of the Moment.
Oh, yeah, sure, I remember that.
And Ray Charles is on that. He played piano. And I recorded Misty with Ray, and we did it with no rehearsal, one take.
Wow.
And that's my favorite plunger solo of all time. Wow. And if you can dig it up, play that for everybody.
I will.
That's my favorite.
Well, turns out we can dig it up. This being the age of information and easy access on that thing called the internet. So here it is. This is Steve Touré with the great Ray Charles playing Misty.
3, 4.
I think we were talking about that recording and stuff when we did the Trombone Journal cover, when I got that cover for you and we did
right.
that interview. Yeah, I remember us talking about that. Well, I really hate to say it, but it seems we're at the end of our time.
Okie doke.
Man, you know, it's one of these things you don't want to wrap up, but I will say officially, thanks for being a guest on this. It was just as much fun as I was hoping it would be, and I knew it would be. marvelous to have you here. You know that we all, to steal from Duke, we all love you madly. And everything that you're into, man.
All right.
Well, you know what? Anytime you're in Chicago, please let me know. I'll come out and
sure enough,
and say hello, buy you a couple of pints or a coffee or pie, whatever you want, man. We'll do it up.
Beautiful.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, good seeing you. Good talking to you.
Likewise, sir. I hope you get some rest now for a little while.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've been busy taking care of my wife all day. I got to go practice now.
Got a
rehearsal tomorrow.
Ah, well, I hope she feels better soon. And the late night shed.
All right.
Okay, man. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Man, oh man, was that fun or what? A lot of music, a lot of good stories, talking, and Steve Touré. All right, man. Well, stay tuned for our next episode. I do believe we have the wonderful Alex Isles on tap. So a couple of more trombone virtuosos that are lined up to do some interviews, and then we might do some solo stuff. The royal we will do some solo work, man, some comedy, some discussions. We'll go deep. We'll discuss with ourselves, man. So that's coming up, as well as some other guests that don't even play trombone. Might even get some folks that are civilians. They're not even musicians. We'll just talk. We'll hang. We'll talk. It's Weezer World, folks, and look forward to seeing you next time. Bye.
WCBC Weezer World.
Weezer World's a production of Weezer World Productions 2025.
Talk faster, man.
Weezer World.